It is. Well, you know, I kind of knew I had to bring her out of the closet because everybody loves her so much, you know. So, but the first half of the show is me. I open for Mama, you know.
Yeah.
And it's sort of largely autobiographical, and I think is probably everything everybody would ask me if we did questions and answers like Carol does.
Oh, neat.
So you probably know more about me than you ever wanted to by the end of my half of the show. And then Mama comes on, and she gets to say everything that I'm not allowed to say because it's politically incorrect.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah. Well,
of course, Donald Trump has already done that like mad in Iowa. I'm thinking we should redo the caucus.
You think so?
Yeah, and maybe Mama should come and just, I don't know, straighten things out a little bit.
I would love that. Absolutely. Well, let's back up. And I know you have done many, many interviews over the years talking about your beginnings with the Carol Burnett Show and you know, right out of high school and how it all began with the Miss Fireball contest and all of that. And I would love for you to share it with our listeners for people who don't know how you joined the cast.
Oh, I will. And it's the first story I tell in my show because everybody always asks me. And I think, you know, a lot of people remember back that far. A lot of people know there was maybe a contest involved. A lot of people know that I maybe wrote a letter, but nobody ever has the details right. So I wind up telling that story all the time. So I decided to kind of open my show with it. And just briefly, I was a big fan letter writer when I was a kid. And when I cut my hair short before I went into high school, all my friends said, "You look like Carol Burnett." So my mom said, "Why don't you write her a fan letter?" Which I did, and told her about this contest I was going to be in, Miss Fireball. And she got that letter and magically landed on her desk at the right time. She took my dad's name out of the article, called me on the phone, made arrangements to come and see that contest. So it was all just sort of very serendipitous. Just so happened she was getting ready to put the Carol Burnett Show together. All of this unbeknownst to me, unbeknownst to America. I honestly thought I was going to graduate from high school, go to college. I was going to go to my dad's alma mater, UCLA, study dental hygiene. I was going to clean teeth for a living, marry a rich dentist, and hang it up. And I basically got kidnapped by show business.
That is great. And is it true that Carol was very pregnant when she came to see you?
She was. She was. Yes, that was her second child.
And
yeah.
She kind of sat in the back and kind of hid.
And said, "Please don't tell anybody I'm here.
Yeah.
Just get me two seats." And
two seats. That's great.
I'll sneak in, sneak out. Well, she had her husband with her. They came to, it was at Hollywood Park. It was the racetrack. And her husband kept saying, "What the hell is she, a jockey?"
And the reason that I love this is because my dad had the album with your photo on it. And I love the song "The Night the Lights Went Out in Georgia." And we had the record album at our house. talk about how that became a number one song. Maybe a little background on that, because I read somewhere it was also offered to Cher.
Yeah, well, I was married to the guy that wrote it for like 10 minutes, and it was really the only good thing that came out of the whole marriage. That and I got the dog. But he wrote it and then didn't like it, and I kept telling him it was a huge hit. And he said, "Well, you can do the demo then, because I hate it." And I did the demo. Nobody wanted it because everybody said it would have been the South. His producer was producing Cher at the time. This was back during, oh gosh, like Gypsies, Tramps, and Thieves time. You
right.
know?
Yeah.
And he said, "Well, I'll just give it to Cher." And Sonny said, "No, it'll offend the South. It has to be rewritten." And Bobby said, I don't like it. Why would I rewrite it? I never liked it to begin with. And I just kept saying, "This thing is a smash, you guys." So finally, his producer just literally threw his hands up and said, "Let's just go in the studio and do it with Vicky." And yes, that's how I had my one hit record, which ended up being the ultimate demise of an already doomed marriage. So it's kind of a little interesting, little bittersweet chapter in my life.
Okay, tell me about the cue cards and the word "savor" on one of the cue cards. Because if you saw the word "savor," it meant watch out for Tim Conway because something was coming.
Exactly right. It meant, yeah, because back in the day we had lovingly handwritten cue cards. Now everything's on a teleprompter. But back when we did the Burnett Show, there was no such thing as a teleprompter. And everything was put up. We had an entire cue card department, all these guys that would write and rewrite and, you know. And if you looked out into the audience and you saw one of Tim's cards that said Saver, that meant here comes the joke that's going to save the whole sketch that nobody has heard yet. At one point, he had so many Saver cards, he had his office wallpapered in them.
So did he not rehearse? I mean, the rest of you...
Well, not a lot. He wasn't a big rehearser. He was a troublemaker. He was always building something with the prop man or, you know, rewriting all of his lines. You know, he was dyslexic.
I didn't know
so
that.
So it was very hard for him to study a script. And he wrote, if you will, most of his own material. So he knew what was going on, but nobody else did. And, yeah, he was just a little troublemaker. All the rest of us were very well rehearsed.